Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon, presented by TeeOff.com by the PGA Tour. I am your host, Shane Bacon, and just a reminder, Bellerive Country Club isn't the only must-play in the St. Louis area. Tapawingo National Golf Club, I hope I'm saying that right, Tapawingo, that's a great name, I hope it has a good logo, is a Gary Player design that features the same tight tree-lined fairways and classic parkland feel, plus it's a little easier to get on the first tee. Not in St. Louis, more of a links player, no worries. TeeOff.com by the PGA Tour and its thousands of courses have you covered. So book your next tee time on TeeOff.com by PGA Tour, the official tee time reservation site of the PGA Tour, and you do so without booking fees. That's right, no booking fees. Every course, every tee time. Plus, as a valued listener to the Clubhouse, you'll get to save an additional 25% on deal times with the single-use promo code TeeOffBacon. And yes, it is PGA Championship week, final major of the year, final time that the PGA Championship will be the final major of the year. So plenty that goes into this week as we not just look ahead to the next 4 days, but look ahead to kind of the historics. And so I asked Kyle Porter, a good buddy of mine, to come on and chat about the week, the year, who needs it, who doesn't really need the win, and of course, what it's like to cover Tiger Woods in 2018. Unlike a little bit of what we've seen in the past, you know, covering Tiger 4 or 5 years ago was golf-related, but the last couple of years before 2018, it was more about the stuff around the golf. It was more about, you know, the injuries and the WDs and the pain he's gone through and all of those things. So it was interesting to have him come on and just chat a little bit about that. That's towards the end of the podcast. We, of course, jumped into some of the PGA Championship stuff early. It was a fun listen, so I hope you enjoy it. And before we get to it, I just wanted to tell you that when it comes to golf equipment, we always want the newest driver that hits the ball really, really far, or a ball that goes 5 yards further, or shoes that are the best in the world. One thing that never gets the enough attention is one thing you use every shot, and that thing that holds it protects your golf clubs, and it is an essential part of your on-course fashion. That's your golf bag. Haven't changed your bag in 5 or even 10 years? Well, treat yourself to an upgrade today with the Ogio Cirrus bag. It's fully loaded with all the features you want in a golf bag, yet still remarkably light. You can carry it effortlessly while also protecting those brand new golf clubs of yours, complete with a water-resistant pocket for your valuables and a rapid access pocket, making it quick and easy to get a new ball after you send one into a backyard. I know you don't do that. They just wrote that, but I know you don't hit them out of bounds. Check out Ogio.com or your local golf retailer to get your hands on the Cirrus today. Stop carrying around the golf bag you've had since the 90s. It's time for an upgrade. Ogio, the world's best bags. All right, Kyle and I went fairly long, so let's get right to it. And we welcome back into the Clubhouse. It's been a bit, Kyle Porter. You know Kyle from CBS Sports. He does an unbelievable job with the golf stuff over there. And also, you might not know this, but Kyle helps out with PistolsFiringBlog.com, which focuses on Oklahoma State football as we fast approach it. And Kyle, this might be one of the first times ever that Arizona landed a cover of Sports Illustrated, and maybe Oklahoma State was not involved in that. I mean, Arizona football actually getting a little love.
How nervous are you about that?
I texted Joel Klatt yesterday, and I told him I thought his top 25 videos were great, and all he wrote back was, I didn't have Arizona in my top 25. And I was like, well, thanks a lot. It's literally the only thing I ever asked. But people came here for some golf talk. Of course, it's PGA Championship week. And let me just say for the last time, I'm going to say it, despite everybody hating the fact that we still bring it up. This is truly Glory's last shot. This is the last time we're going to have the PGA Championship wrap up the season. It's always been the major, you know, with the identity that at least it's the final one. And that's going to change next year. So I ask you to start. Which player do you feel like needs this major the most this year? And which player might not really need it? Which player where if they go through this week and don't win, it's not really going to be that big of a deal?
That's a good question. I think the player that needs it the most is probably Ricky Fowler. I know everybody came here for the golf Oklahoma State crossover takes. but I think it's Fowler just from a – man, it seems like we talk about him a lot in the fallout from every major. And I do think there's a difference between needing it the most and having the most to gain, because I think the player with the most to gain is Jordan Spieth. And I wrote about this for CBSSports.com in a piece on – I think it was Monday or something. Jordan Spieth can go from – sort of this narrative about how it's been a down year, even though we add the caveat, a down year for Jordan, to one of the most historic seasons ever in that he could win the career Grand Slam. And it's like there's no leap that's greater for anyone who could potentially win this tournament. So those are the two guys on that side. And then The guy who I think has the least to gain by winning is actually somebody like Rory McIlroy. He's got four majors. Does another PGA really add to the way you feel about him? I don't, historically, no. Maybe because it's been a while, yes. But from a historical context, I don't think it really does.
Well, we didn't plan this, but that is about as good a segue as we could possibly have. The next question I was going to ask was about Rory and Jordan. These are two guys that were the next big things, right? I mean, Rory came on, and he was going to be the protege to Tiger, and he was going to take over the tour when Tiger got out of here, and Phil and Sergio and Adam Scott, they all left. And then, of course, Jordan Spieth burst on the scene, and he doesn't look like the, whatever you want to call it, the dominating figure that is Rory McIlroy, but all he has is between the ears, and he's able to close things out. And you mentioned the Open win last year. And these two guys have had brutal seasons. I mean, Rory had one really hot back nine, and he got the win down in Florida, and Spieth hasn't won since that Open Championship you mentioned a year ago. We talk so much about these two guys, and while we're chatting about them, there's guys out there that are getting better and that are winning consistently. And I'm talking about Dustin Johnson and Justin Thomas. I mean, these guys are 1A and 1B. Why does it feel like when the conversation comes around these big events and the major championships, we all want to ask about Rory, we want to ask about Jordan, and we forget that we're seeing two players. I mean, Justin Thomas has really just turned himself into a world beater, and Dustin continues to do what Dustin does, and he picked up his 19th win a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I think it's probably because they're so far out in front in terms of majors. And so you want to talk about the guy who can get to 8 or 7 or 9 or whatever it is in terms of major championships. And I always go back to the fact that it's insane to me. And I know you've talked about this on here before, but it's insane to me the list of players who have won major.
Right.
I mean, Jason Day, Dustin Johnson, Sergio, it's a joke. And so you start thinking around major championships about the guys, you know, can so-and-so get to 7? We don't really, I think the general public doesn't really care if somebody gets to like 2. And so I think that's why there's maybe even more fervor around JT, because he's, you know, 8 or 9 years younger than DJ. And so you're like, oh, well, how many could he get to? We're so obsessed with the final number. And I think that because Spieth and Rory are so far out in front of everybody else in terms of total majors, that's why they get brought up so much around the four biggest events of the year.
Yeah, but it's still, you know, the major talk, and this is major talk. I mean, it's a major championship week, but you know, when you look at a guy like Dustin, who goes out there week in and week out and puts himself in the conversation and wins these events all the time, and he does it better than anyone else has the last few years on the PGA Tour, and you think to yourself, he's playing similar fields, if not equal fields, at some of these events, and he's able to win. Yet, again, as you mentioned, he has one major, and that was the backlash I got. I mean, I wrote after his win, I said, you know, we're watching somebody that's historically great, and I got a whole bunch of people that said he only has one major, he only has one major championship. He's been in the conversation a lot. It just hasn't worked out those 4 weeks. Do we discredit these PGA Tour wins because we're so obsessed with, as you mentioned, kind of the final major number?
Yeah, we do. I really struggle with this because to me, and I was talking to Chip Patterson of CBS about this the other day, it's like, what's the difference between, I mean, legitimately, what's the difference between winning Bridgestone and winning this week at Bellary?
Right.
I mean, field-wise, you have more golfers in the field at Bellary at the PGA, but half of the additional ones that you're adding are PGA pro. Like they're not professionals. Like they're not professional golfers. They're these guys that just sort of got into the tournament through the PGA of America. And so you're basically beating the same field at a similar course. And we're so obsessed with just slapping the label of PGA championship on there. And I think that we underrate winning. I mean, DJ winning 19 times in this era is there needs to be some normalization like we do with, you know, how you always do with, oh, well, so-and-so made this much money in 1960 and, right, and you factor in inflation. There has to be some sort of deflation, I guess, or whatever, looking backwards, because to win 19 times in this era is unbelievable. But we also, I think we underrate winning at specific courses. So I was thinking about this. I think that Justin Thomas is going to win a lot, but what's the best course that he's taken down? And I've gotten into course architecture a little bit more over the last year or two. And so you look at Jordan Spieth and it's like, wow, he won Birkdale. He won Augusta. He won Colonial. Like those are
Chambers
those
Bay.
Yeah, of course. Shout out to Fox. Those are amazing courses. And I wonder how much, like, it doesn't feel like we separate guys who won at certain courses from others. But yeah, I agree with you that we overrate winning majors, and we underrate kind of the level of field, right? Because Tiger winning 18 WGCs, say whatever you want about the WGC, it's an elite field, and right. fields make great tournaments. If all of a sudden everybody stopped going to the Masters, it wouldn't be the Masters. It just wouldn't. And so you have to have great fields to have great tournaments. And there's no like different level of winning these events other than the difference between majors and everything else. And I feel like there should be.
And it's to me, and I've thought about it a lot more this year than I ever have, is the PGA Tour in the sense of intrigue amongst the players, the guys in the field, when it comes to winning or finishing fifth, I think is the lowest it's ever been, because there's so much money involved in golf. There's so much money on the PGA Tour that if you win the Bridgestone, that's great. But if you finish third, you know, that's also really great. I mean, I think we were chatting in our little nerdy golf group chat about Ricky's performance in the WGCs over his career, and he has no wins and's made over $4 million. And that's what the PGA Tour is. And to me, when it comes to majors, that's the four times a year that these players really care about winning, because they know, as we've chatted about already, where it puts them historically, where it puts them amongst their peers. And so I almost feel like the players, more than the media and more than the fans, the players hype it up themselves. And maybe that's why some of these guys have such a hard time winning them. I mean, a Paul Casey or a Lee Westwood, these guys were able to win, you know, of course, you know, Paul Casey mostly on the other side of the pond, but they were able to win at events when they got themselves in contention. But for some reason, the major idea of a major championship, you see guys fall apart late way more than you do at any other regular tour event.
Yeah, no, it's totally true. And you mentioned the money there. I do wonder, and I don't know if you've ever talked to anybody about this off the record. I know that I haven't, because it's sort of a weird thing to talk about. But when you talk about the money, just what is it's so hard to stay motivated for like 20 years.
Right. Exactly.
Compared to when, like, we always joke about how Arnold Palmer or Jack Nicklaus only made like a 1.5 mil in their career or whatever. That was like, they still made good money because they had all these endorsements or whatever, but they were not making these egregious amounts to where they didn't ever have to worry about. I mean, they were still like building towards something throughout their career. And you look at somebody like Rory and it's like, wow, I'm 25. I have probably $100 million. I've won four majors. And you start looking around and you're like, the only thing I have left to do is to win the Masters.
Right. Exactly. And that's why his quote made more sense this year.
Yeah. And it's like, how do you stay motivated? Like, even if you're the most ambitious, driven person on the planet, there has to be some level of fall off. And I think that's why you start. I mean, we've gotten this run of first time major winners over the last 2 years, the Patrick Reeds, Koepka last year, Sergio, because those guys are still building towards something. They're still working towards something. And I think that falls off after you just naturally after you win. And I don't know. This is not the question you asked, but I was just thinking about that as you were talking about money and winning majors.
Yeah, you know what? You brought up something that I'll be very interested to see is, say Rory wins the Masters next year.
Yeah.
What does he do with his life? I mean, because we know that there are those groups of the players that, you know, they seem to always be together. And then there's Rory, who's a little bit of an outlier in that group. You know, he doesn't, you know, stay at the house at Carnoustie with the entire group of guys. And he hasn't been kind of in any sort of the, whatever you'd call it. I mean, I don't want to even bring up the spring break boys, but, you know, that wasn't his thing. That's never been his thing. He's always taken golf as a business, and that's been his business approach. And literally the money he made is what kicked him off of his own Twitter when he responded, yeah, to, I don't remember who was it, Steve Elkington, about how much money he'd made. And if he wins the Masters, which he has been quoted as saying is the last check mark and the thing he's focused on every year, what's he going to do, you know, at the Belle Reve, and what's he going to do with these courses coming up that maybe he's not massively passionate about? And it's going to be very interesting. The interesting thing to me was, I know talking to Rory and talking to people around Shinnecock headed into that U.S. Open, that he was so pumped about that U.S. Open. He loves that golf course. He'd been out there as much as anybody else, and then he struggled. So, you know, maybe it's the motivation can be obviously be a benefit, and we've seen it at times, and then it could be a detriment. And, of course, we've seen that at the Masters over time with him, where he's struggled when he's gotten himself in contention after 2011.
He'll probably start a podcast.
He's going to, isn't he?
Beat all of us out.
Yeah, this thing's going to be gone.
No, that's what's so impressive about Phil, I think. And we don't – I mean, it's insane that he's almost 50 years old and he's just toiling away on the – he's going to Memphis and all these places. And you're like, this
Houston.
This is crazy. Like, this – like I mean, seriously, like he's just a lifer. And I think there are some young guys like that. I think Spieth's a little bit like that, but I don't know that all of them are. And is Dustin Johnson going to play the senior tour? Like it's a different era. It's a different way of doing things. And I'm really intrigued to see how it's sort of, cause we always talk about, oh, all these young guys are winning. And it's like, well, maybe it's just the fact that everything's skewing younger and we're not going to see players play as much into their early, mid to late 40s.
Is this Phil's second year that when he passes away in whatever, 150 years from now, is this going to be, is 2018 going to be the year after 04 that we remember him the most for? Because he literally has done from start to finish, from winning to losing his mind to the commercial. I feel like this might be the most headlines we've ever had from Phil Mickelson.
Yeah, his win in Mexico feels like it was like 8 years ago, honestly.
You forget who he beat in a playoff. They keep showing that Justin Thomas highlight during that that kind of the recap. You know, it's like the hole out and the Rory fist pump and all those things. And you're like, oh, that's right. It was Justin Thomas in the playoff with Phil.
Yeah, it's interesting because this is another thing that I've talked about with some people. And I don't... like, all of the stuff is hilarious, and, like, he's obviously just a legend. But I also feel like the worse you get at golf, like, the more your game falls off, the less funny that stuff becomes. Yeah. Because you're like, well, how much of this is just trying to stay in the public eye? And I don't really think that's what it is right now, because he's still playing pretty good golf. He won this year. I mean, he's played, you know, I think over the next few years and the past few years, we've seen him kind of taper off at the end of the year just because he's almost 50 years old. But I still think he's competitive. He's good. I just worry that into his 50s and maybe beyond, it's like, is this still funny, or, right, or what are we doing here? You know,
this has seemed like, at least for me, and I'd have to actually go back and see. I feel like I did pick Phil Mickelson to win the Masters, because I feel like I do that every year. But This has seemed like the first year where, headed into the post-Augusta major championship schedule, I didn't ever feel like there was a realistic chance that Phil was going to win.
Yeah, I know. I've seen it some places this week. He's like 100-1 at the PGA. And that's just as high a number as I've seen for him since I've been covering this. You know, it doesn't feel like he has a real shot at a lot of these places. And then, of course, you're going to have the one tournament, and you've been big on this, and I agree. And probably at Augusta, where he's like 53 and wins, and we're like, oh my gosh, Phil's the greatest golfer of all time, you know, whatever. And so as long as we get that, like, I'm all in on all of it. But the end of his and Tiger's careers, and especially if they're going to dovetail together like it seems like they are, is going to be super interesting.
Let's take a quick break to just remind you that Belle Reve Country Club isn't the only must-play in the St. Louis area. Tapawingo National Golf Club is a Gary Player design that features the same tight tree-lined fairways and classic parkland feel. Plus, it's a lot easier to get on the first tee. Why? Because you use TeeOff.com. If you're not in the St. Louis area and you're more of a links player, no worries. TeeOff.com by the PGA Tour and its thousands of courses have you covered. So book your next tee time on TeeOff.com by the PGA Tour, the official tee time reservation site of the PGA Tour. And you do so without booking fees. That's right, no booking fees. Every course, every tee time. Plus, as a valued listener to the clubhouse, you'll get to save an additional 25% on deal times with a single-use promo code TEEOFFBACON. That's at TEEOFF.com. Use TEEOFFBACON. You'll save 25%. All right, back to Kyle. Okay, I want to ask a couple of PGA Championship questions, then we're going to jump into a little Tiger, and it's going to be Tiger talk unlike you expect. First things first is, and this isn't about the golf course, this is about the PGA. How much better is the PGA year when you know the Ryder Cup is after it?
Yeah, it's way better because, like, and I don't know. I don't know if everybody thinks like this. I know that I do. I know that you probably do. I know that a lot of the people in the golf media do. This is the last week to qualify for the Ryder Cup. And I think that's sort of gone just kind of – it's flying under the radar. I mean, if Tony Finau wins this week, he's probably on the Ryder Cup team. If Xander Schauffele wins this week, he's probably on the Ryder Cup team. And so I don't know. You'd have to do the math. I don't know how it all works out. But it is really interesting because if you get somebody on either team that wins this tournament, they're going to – not only do you win a major, but you get onto a elite stacked Ryder Cup team. And I think that that makes it – you know, we've already seen the first three winners this year are all going to be in the Ryder Cup. It'd be pretty cool if all four of them were for somebody who wins the PGA.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a different Ryder Cup approach. I feel like this year everybody's like, it's we can't wait to see what the teams are so then if we can spend two months debating on which team's going to be better, it's going to be unbelievable. But I just always think to myself, normally this week is a little depressing because you're like, okay, great, yeah. You know, it's PGA, it's going to be fun, it's intriguing. And then that kind of drops off after, you know, until we get into the FedEx Cup playoffs, which, I mean, you know, for what they are, they're still somewhat interesting for people that are interested in golf because you want to see what people do in those 4 weeks. But normally when it's not a Ryder Cup year, you're a little bit bummed out after the PGA. So it's always nice to have that. Second is,
think about next year. You're going to have the Open at the end of July and then you don't have anything until another major until April.
Well, you have the President's Cup. Come on. You're supposed to count the President's Cup. Where is the President's Cup next year? Australia? It's a rural Melbourne. At least we get to watch that.
Yeah. I mean, it might be at like, who knows what time it'll be, but it'll be great. I can't wait to see Anrabon Lahiri get just waxed by Brooks Koepka. That'll be phenomenal.
Go one and five career wise. I did the President's Cup last year and I did it with for the World Feed, which is, basically, if you're in any country that's not the UK or the United States, you sadly have to hear my voice talk through the President's Cup for 5 hours. And, you know, going into it on paper, you were like, man, this is going to be really, really rough. And then it was really rough. And we had to do the Curtis Cup this year. And the same exact thing went down. And I had the Walker Cup last year. And it was like three team events in a row I did were headed in. I was like, there's no chance the Americans aren't going to win this. Like, that's how good these teams are. And it'll be interesting if the Americans win this Ryder Cup team. You're going to have, you know, really across-the-board dominance. And, you know, the Solheim Cup, of course, is lacking, you know, some of the best players in the world because they don't have anybody from the you know, South Koreas and from Japan and China. But, you know, I mean, the Americans holding all those titles for this many years in a row – it's really flipped in the sense of how team events have felt because it always felt like we were the underdogs going into almost all of them.
Yeah, and especially because this was supposed to be the era in which golf exploded all over the world and you see basketball and all these things going more global. And it's like, well, wait, is the U.S. actually like securing their stranglehold on these big time team events? I don't know. It remains to be seen, but I do think that that's pretty interesting.
Okay, I want to ask about this golf course because I feel like not a lot of people know about it. We've seen if you haven't seen them yet, I'm sure you will. I mean, the weather has been brutal there. I know they had an awful winter and then a really hot summer, and the greens aren't what they want them to be, and you're going to see them get worse and worse, in my opinion, throughout the week, which only brings up one thing, and that's patience and ball striking. So are those the types of players that you're looking at this week to have success, considering these greens are going to make people miss 4 and 5 footers?
Yeah, I looked at strokes gained off the tee and strokes gained on approach shots, which obviously those are two categories that you normally look at. But I thought Andy over at the Fried Egg brought up a good point. This is a course where the rough is going to be pretty thick. And so everybody's going to miss fairways, but if you're really long, you're going to have a 9-iron out of the rough instead of if you're, you know, the Zach Johnson type where you have like a 4-iron out of the rough. And I think that disparity, the difference between having a wedge out of the rough, out of thick rough versus having a 4, 5 or 6-iron is, it's pretty stark. I mean, it's big. And so I think that just like we saw, I mean, you could take the Firestone leaderboard and just apply it, like just slap all the names on this one.
Copy,
and
I'd be like,
yeah, Finau, okay, Koepka, yeah, Cantlay, Rory, Jade, oh yeah, DJ, yeah, in. So I wouldn't be surprised to see pretty much the exact same leaderboard. It is interesting because I was watching sort of the flyover, whatever, video of all these holes, and there's a lot of elevated greens, and there's a lot of these big drop-offs around the green. So if you miss some of these greens, you're dead. Like, it's double. It might be out of bounds. And in addition to that, there's a lot of these huge bunkers in kind of the surrounding the green. So you might miss a green and it rolls to the center of this bunker. And all of a sudden you've got a 50-foot shot out of the sand. It's going to be, I think, a little bit different than you see on a normal PGA Tour event in terms of the sand.
I wanted to bring something up. You mentioned Zach Johnson. And this guy has two majors. His legacy going to be a PGA Tour staple, a major winner at St. Andrews and Augusta? Or is his legacy going to be the guy that anytime we in the media have needed to mention a short hitter for 20 years, we mentioned Zach Johnson's name? I feel like he's the all – what other go-to is there?
His legacy might be eating corn out of the claret jug. That was not good. I don't need that. But, like, it's so hard to reconcile, right? Like, he won Augusta and St. Andrews.
Right.
I mean, what am I supposed to do? It's one thing. Okay. If you win St. Andrews and you don't win anything else, whatever, that's fine. If you win Augusta and you don't win anything else, but if you win both of those over a long period, like it was the difference in like 6 years. I mean, that's a career, and he's won, I don't know, 12 times. I don't really know what to do with him, honestly, because I think that he sort of gets made fun of by people, but he's got 12 wins and he won Augusta and St. Andrews in this era.
It's funny. We always seem to, it's like when you're grasping for the short hitter to compare to the guys that bomb it, it's always like, well, you got Dustin and you got Zach, and you're like, man, poor Zach Johnson. This guy's like the best wedge player in 20 years and he's got this great short game. And it's like, but he can't hit it. He can't hit a 275. So we got to throw him in there. Spieth has in a way fallen into that category a little bit, where it's like, the player that's not the new player, even though Spieth hits it, you know, obviously plenty far and is one of the best ball strikers in the world. He's become that kind of new age player. No wonder they're good buddies and actually share the corn out of the claret jug. I do want to get into Tiger for a minute. And it's about Tiger. It's about your year with Tiger Woods, if that makes sense. You know, I used to write online, and I know that you chase headlines and you chase storylines, and your editors want you to do stuff sometimes that you don't get to do. And I'm sure over the past 4 and 5 years, writing about Tiger Woods was a little bit of a slog. And I'm sure you had times where it was a bummer to have to write another Tiger story. This year's had to feel different. This is a guy that's competing, and he's making this comeback, and he's putting himself in opportunities to win big, big events. I mean, of course, the Open Championship was really the culmination of all that. So what's it been like this year covering Tiger compared to maybe the last 4 and 5 years, where it hasn't really been about the golf, it's been more about the name?
Yeah, I think in a micro sense, it's been really hard and not that fun, because you are writing note. I mean, we see every shot, right? We see it on whatever network is covering the event. They show every single Tiger shot, and they should. Like, that's a good business decision to do that. But because of that, you know, I'm having to take notes on that, live blog that, write about every round. And you're just like, oh my gosh, like, can you go back to like the 9 event schedule instead of the 17 event schedule? And so from that sense, it really hasn't honestly been that fun, but from a macro sense, it's been fascinating. And so I love the midweek or the pre-week, or, you know, like the Monday, Tuesday piece, where I get to sort of pull back 30,000 feet and say, okay, how does this fit into the bigger context of golf historically, Tiger Woods historically, and the way that Tiger sort of interacts with golf historically? That's the stuff that I love writing. And I think it's been so fascinating to see. I mean, he's so much more multidimensional now as a dad, as a golfer. Before he was Superman, and so you sort of were in awe, but you never related. And now when he leads the Open and goes double and then bogey to lose the Open and hugs his kids, you're like, wow, I actually sort of relate to that. I mean, I'm not leading the Open, but there's disappointment in life and then your kids are there and all these different things. I don't know how much he personally has changed, but I think the way that we relate to him as a human being has changed quite a bit over the last 10 years.
And what is it like, readership wise? Is the interest and intrigue still there? I mean, is it still a boom when you write a Tiger story versus any other player in golf?
Yeah, I went back and looked. We do these live blogs for each Tiger round, and the numbers are a joke. And you sort of get stuff into Google, and people start just searching Tiger. Honestly, like, people are just like, I wonder what Tiger's doing. He's that much on sort of the minds of people who are following golf. But the two pieces that I wanted to compare, I went back and looked at, I wrote this thing after Rory. So I kind of wanted to pick the next biggest name. I guess it's Rory. I don't know, maybe Phil, but I picked Rory because he won Arnold Palmer sort of dramatically. And I wrote a long thing about him the day after on Monday, and it got, I think it got like 10,000 page views. And I spent a ton of time on it. I was deep in it, and I thought it was pretty good. And, you know, I threw it out there on Twitter and everything. And then a couple of days before Bridgestone, I wrote this piece on Tiger that was just popped in my head, and I banged it out in like 20 minutes. Right. It was like five stats that show why Tiger's actually been a little bit better than you probably think this year. And I did a mild amount of research on it. And he got I think he got like, it was up to 12 or 13,000 page views. So far more than the Rory piece did, even though I spent, you know, like a quarter of the amount of time. And that's hard, because part of you is like, well, I should just write eight Tiger things.
Exactly.
But that's not fun, because you're just sort of becoming a robot. You're becoming this like computer program that just spits out Mad Libs of Tiger Woods playing golf, and it's absurd. But it's tough, because like I said, with TV, the same with the internet, it's business decisions, and you want to attract readership and viewers and page views and all that stuff. And Tiger certainly still does that.
Yeah. We amongst kind of the golf media and the golf fans, you know, the first 2 days at the US Open, you know, people were asking us on Friday, and of course yelling at me on Twitter, you know, why are you showing Tiger? Why are you showing Tiger? Why are you showing Tiger? And you're going,
like you control the camera.
Hey, yes. Yeah. I don't think Mark Loomis is going to let me produce it, but you know, Tiger transcends the sport that we are loving. You know, I mean, Tiger is a bigger thing than, you know, everyone else in the field combined. And for better or worse, when he's playing, there's intrigue. If it's great, awesome. If it's bad, that's also a story. And so there's something to follow along on that end. And, you know, we knew that we of course, I mean, we actually plan. I don't know if people knew that in TV, but we plan ahead of what's going on. And, of course, you know, as the weekend approached, you know, we were preparing for, you know, the last few groups, and it looked like Tiger was going to miss the cut and all that stuff. But, you know, people are going to tune in on a Friday afternoon, and they probably want to see this guy that they know by one name, unlike, you know, a Molinari or somebody like that that you and I follow and pay a lot of attention to. So it is interesting. You do, as you said, it can feel exhausting at times to follow along. I know there's been times where this podcast has been posted and my great editor has written Tiger in the headline. And at times you kind of go, oh, well, it's not really that much about Tiger. But then you think to yourself, you know, when people are on the podcast search and Tiger pops up, that's good. I mean, that's good for business. So it's a little bit of a balance, but I was very interested in kind of your side of it, because I know, and I can only imagine, the last 3 or 4 years without Tiger really being involved, you've had to be creative. You've had to find ways to get stories out there that people clicked on and read, especially in this new age of not really going to a website, more finding the news via social media. So I'm sure, as you said, it's interesting to hear that it's been both positive and negative at times, because it's felt, you know, a little exhausting, but at the same time, you know, there's going to be a lot of eyes on it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, you get to the end of the year, and I'm sure you guys have experienced this a little bit too, that you get to the end of the year and it's like, oh, wow, your numbers were up 900%. And it's like, well, I don't know if I was that much better of a writer this year, or people were just Googling Tiger Woods, you know? So it's tough. And it feels like nobody wants to hear either of us complain about covering professional right. golf for a living. And that's certainly not what I'm not complaining about it. I think it's amazing. I love getting to do it. But I think there's a misperception that people in the media just worship Tiger Woods. And that's all we want to do is cover Tiger and think about him and write about him. And he's certainly interesting, but that I don't think that viewpoint is necessarily true of most people.
Yeah, and I think this has been the most interesting year of Tiger's career. I mean, personally, I mean, even if he doesn't win, which it really is starting to look like he's not going to win this year. I mean, maybe he snags a FedEx Cup title or something. I don't think he's going to win this week. But even without that, I think this has been, as you've said it, the person, the human, the ups and downs, the actually missing big putts on the 18th hole when he used to make the big putts, you know, those types of things have made this very interesting to watch. And I do not apologize for 2018 Tiger coverage, because it's needed to be what it is. It's needed to be fun, because it should have been fun, and it should be fun for people to see a legend, one of the best ever, try to come back. That's intriguing, and that's awesome. And that's why 86 is the best golf story ever, because there's been a lot of times where Tom Watson had a chance to win at 58, or Greg Norman was in the hunt at the Open in his 50s, or Phil Mickelson, for goodness sakes, gets in the hunt at late 40s, and it's cool to see these guys with one last gasp. And in 86, we finally got to see the guy pull it off, which rarely, if ever, happens. And if Tiger does it this week or at Augusta next year, or, you know, we'll take it at the U.S. Open, for goodness sakes, if he does it finally, it probably will be the biggest golf story ever.
Yeah, and you get to watch a guy who is in his 40s with kids sort of wrestle with his own mortality. And we don't see that a lot, because the I don't know, guys don't usually reach the heights that Tiger did. And so he feels in 2000 or 2005 even like he's just immortal and infinite. And then all of a sudden 2018, he's talking about what losing the Open meant for what he taught his kids. And you're like, wow, right. That's like the most human thing. That's like a very mortal, finite thing that I can identify with. And I just think that outside of the golf, like that sort of narrative is endlessly intriguing to me. And so I'm with you. I think Tiger at 42 and hopefully at 46 and 49, is way more fascinating as a person. And I think that translates into the golf as he plays, than he was when he was 31 or 26 or whatever.
It's crazy to me that I think Rory earlier this season kind of complained about the star-studded pairings and groupings, and there's been plenty of the young players that have talked about being in the Tiger bubble, and they threw Rory and JT in with Tiger for the first 2 days of the PGA. It's like, here you go, guys. Here's what you wanted.
Yeah, it was JT at Riviera that said, I think, or maybe it was Rory that said, I think he loses like a quarter of a stroke around or whatever. And then you're like, oh, well, okay, great. I'm going to lose a quarter of a stroke around as well. I loved the way the Open did the pairings. I saw some people talking about that on Twitter and stuff, but it was just and part of this is going off the first tee all day and you're spreading everything out throughout the day. It just feels like at the PGA, okay, we've got this 4 hour window of, you know, everybody that's awesome on the course. And then the other 10 hours or whatever, you're like, okay, like Charles Howell's at 3 under. That's great. That's good for me going a couple ways. But I'm not a huge fan of the big time feature groups.
I'm just going to be refreshing Marty Jurtson's page all over and over and over again, because I just want to see, you know, as you said, like there's a pretty decent amount of the field that's made up of these PGA professionals. And I always just root for the two or three that I know to make the cut, because you can only imagine what that must feel like. I mean, I know that's their battle. They're going in to try to make it to the weekend. And so, you know, you just go, well, you know, you might go out there and compete for a little bit. Are you excited about anything in particular this week when it comes to either the golf course, the field, the pairings, the players, the hopes of seeing something? Is there anything that's kind of sticking out to you, or is it just kind of a look at it from a wide angle and see what happens?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm super biased, and you probably are in some ways as well. I think Rory winning again would be pretty cool to see. I picked him like immediately after he finished the Open. I picked him to win this week because I feel like he's not playing that well, but he's still scoring which is really impressive because that's the thing that Spieth has always done so well. So I think to be that I've never covered a Rory win or a Rory major win in person. So I think that would be pretty cool. There's so many, I'm always fascinated by these major championships. There's so many different legacies that sort of hinge on a Sunday afternoon and probably less so at the PGA than at a Shinnecock or an Augusta, but you know, like we've been talking about, it's still a big deal to win a major. And I hope that we continue to get these. I don't know that I necessarily care who ends up on top, like at the Open. It didn't bother me at all that Molinari won, as long as we got just a thrilling Sunday afternoon. And we've gotten a lot of those in recent memory. I hope we get another one at Bellerive.
Yeah, and there is a lot up for grabs in the sense of if you do win this week, what does it mean? I mean, DJ and JT, you know, have had great seasons already with three wins each. You know, you've mentioned Rory. Bubba. Of course, you know, Spieth would be, as you said, make the season and complete the career Grand Slam. And then you keep going down the list. I mean, a Jason Day has had a great season, you know, and would love to add this to it. A Tommy Fleetwood is still kind of looking for the first one and looks more and more comfortable doing it. But you can look down the list, and I do feel like the storylines, if nothing else, have burst out because we have had an interesting, if you will, major championship year. I mean, Patrick Reed winning was great for Patrick Reed and for golf fans that either love him or hate him. And Koepka winning back-to-back U.S. Opens was great for the historics of that. And then, you get Molinari, who maybe he's not going to translate a ton in the U.S., but was great for Italian golf. But it hasn't been like a year where it's, you know, Spieth winning and then JT and then Dustin, and then you come here and you're like, who's going to claim this one? It's been a little bit more of kind of a random-ish major title line. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm looking forward to it. We, of course, at Fox have the women's amateur this week, so I'll be covering that and then keeping kind of a second eye on the PGA as the weekend comes around. But I just hope the greens hold up, for goodness sakes. And as you said, I wouldn't mind if we got a leaderboard a little bit like what we just saw last week at the Bridgestone.
Yeah, we've gotten, like you said, we've gotten winners that have been top 10 players probably statistically, but maybe not necessarily in popularity. And so I think it'd be cool to get one that is just, I don't know, not more well known, but that people get more, like, I don't know how fired up people were about Francesco Molinari winning the Open. I thought the whole day was amazing, but I'm not sure that the sort of general golf public or world or whatever was as excited about that ending as everybody, you know, as those of us in the media were.
Yeah, Kyle Stanley's winning this week. That'll be fun. Kyle, I appreciate you coming on. Always a good chat. You can always check out Kyle at CBS. You can check out the entire website, which I know people don't do anymore, but do it. There's a great stuff there. Always articles flowing through. And then when this season wraps, it'll be focused on Oklahoma State football. How many articles are you writing a week about Oklahoma State?
Right now, as football starts, I'll probably do – I did like two or three yesterday, so I'll probably end up doing – I don't know, 10 or so.
Jeez, you did two or three yesterday?
Yeah, but some of them are short. They're not, you know, they're not like 1,000 words. It's like 300 words on the new defensive coordinator or, you know, whatever.
I don't get how you're skinny. You got kids and a wife and you write like 50 golf articles a day and you're doing all this stuff. It's unbelievable. Hey, congrats on having some good genes, Kyle. Let's chat after the Ryder Cup because I know you get so pumped about it.
Yeah, I probably won't sleep that whole week, so I'm excited about that. You enjoy the women's AM, and we'll talk soon.
It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole! It's in the hole!
Well, that will do it for this week's Clubhouse. Just a reminder, when it comes to golf equipment, we always want the newest driver paired with the ball that flies 5 yards further. The one thing that never gets enough attention is the thing that holds and protects your golf clubs and is an essential part of your on-course fashion. That's your bag. Treat yourself to an upgrade today with the Ogio Cirrus bag. Check out ogio.com. or your local golf retailer to get your hands on a Cirrus today. So stop carrying around the golf bag you've had since the 90s. It's time for an upgrade. Ogio, the world's best bag. And I have a Cirrus and I love it. I've been using it for over a year now. And the upgrade they made to the new one is well worth your time. Check that out at ogio.com. I will have my PGA Championship pick on Wednesday on Twitter, if you care. And then we'll be covering the U.S. Women's Amateur this week from Nashville. We start on Wednesday on FS1. And then we roll through the weekend. So when you're done watching the PGA, if you get sick of the PGA, if you want to DVR something, Wednesday we get going at 4 to 7 p.m. Eastern on FS1. Thursday, same time. Friday, same time, 4 to 7. And then Sunday, the finals, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. on USGA.org, and then 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern. That's on FS1. That will be the finals of the U.S. Women's Amateur. And the next week, boom, right under the U.S. Amateur at Pebble Beach. It'll be a fun couple of weeks. Hope you guys follow along with us, and we'll check back with you next week.